This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, June 22nd, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports. And you know who was making moves last night? The umpires, who for the first time in decades actually aggressively enforced baseball's foreign substance rule, that coming down from Major League Baseball. And the first guy to be stopped, the best pitcher on the planet, Jacob deGrom, who started for the Mets at 5-10 last night, and he was coming off the mound after the top of the first inning. The umpire stopped him after the game. deGrom talked about if he was surprised they were checking for foreign substances.
No, they said going into it, they were going to check. And, you know, I expected it. You know, it is what it is. And they wanted to go ahead and check. And that was fine.
Speaking with reporters yesterday, he gave a description of his interaction with umpires.
Yeah. I don't know what the impact's going to be. But I said, you know, what all do you guys need? Glove, hat and belt, they said. So I handed them that stuff and then went along my way.
Here was Oakland manager Bob Melvin.
You know, I thought it probably went better than I expected. I mean, the umpires really made it look easy and, you know, had good banter with the relievers. You could see them kind of joking around and smiling with them. It didn't feel like, you know, a situation that, you know, they were like they're being frisked or something like that. I think the umpires made it pretty seamless today. I thought it went better than I would have expected.
In that game that deGrom pitched, he was awesome again. Here he was in the top of the fourth inning.
1-2 pitch, swing and a miss, strike three. It was a slider that time over the inner third. And Ozzie Albies is the sixth strikeout victim for Jacob deGrom today.
That from WCBS. deGrom would throw five scoreless innings. He's now thrown 30 consecutive scoreless innings. And he got help in game one of a doubleheader from Dom Smith.
Smith lines it down the right field line. That is a fair ball. Base hit going into the corner. It should clear the bases. Nito is in. McNeil is in. Racing for the plate. VR. He will score without a throw. And on at second with a three-run double is Dominic Smith. And the Mets have opened up a 4-0 lead.
The Mets have fired two high-ranking employees and will overhaul their legal and human resources departments on the recommendation of independent investigators hired to review the organization following allegations of sexual misconduct against former manager Mickey Callaway. The Indians and the Cubs, and Josh Naylor got a big hit for Cleveland.
And the pitch is driven high and deep, headed to the bleachers in right center. Home run, Naylor! A two-run shot for Josh Naylor, and the Indians now lead 3-0.
And they would go on and win 4-0. That sound from WTAM 1100. But along the way, Indians right-hander Aaron Civale left Monday's game with an injury to his middle finger on his pitching hand. Somehow, Cleveland is 10 games over 500 despite a rash of injuries to their starting rotation. The Astros just keep on rolling.
And he hits this one deep to left field. That's got a chance. And that is gone. A three-run shot for Yordan Alvarez, number 10. Of the season.
That was Steve Sparks, Sparksy on KBME. In San Diego, the Dodgers and the Padres. And in the bottom of the first inning, Julio Urías, struggling for command, faced Manny Machado with a couple of runners on base.
San Diego, 1-2, hammered, absolutely crushed. Deep to left, Rex going back, looking up, gonna go. Three-run homer, Manny Machado. And the Padres have a 4-0 lead before Julio Urías has one out in the first inning.
Yu Darvish was excellent. Six innings, 11 strikeouts. The Padres win this game 6-2. We'll be talking with Jessica Mendoza about that. But before we get to Jess, to Peter Moylan and to Sarah Langs, don't forget ESPN Plus is your home for the European Championship and the Ultimate Fighter. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com to watch. And the NBA Conference semifinals are underway with an exciting and unusual Final Four teams. Listen to the Woj Pod, Jalen and Jacoby, the Hoop Collective, and the Low Post to keep up with all the action. You can find all of these shows on your favorite podcast app. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof.
So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Jessica Mendoza, game analyst for ESPN last night. I heard her on the broadcast that we did of the Dodgers and Padres games. I feel like, Jess, that today we should be doing a baggage claim Monday opening for you.
I know, right? I feel like you every Monday morning, except I'm not as clever. I'm already on the plane, whereas you always find the like nook and cranny at the airport.
Right, and you're wearing a mask, too, which just in case people are wondering, how come Jess sounds like she's wearing a mask? Well, she is. Because that's the rules when you're on a plane and you're at an airport. All right, let's get to it. I know we don't have much time before you take off. The first day of enforcement, I think, was relatively seamless based on the responses that I saw. I love DeGrom's bemused look as he's coming off the mound after the top of the first inning. He's intercepted by the umpires. He has this little wry grin on his face. That as we reported they were going to do, they said, show us your hat, show us your gloves, show us your belt. And then they sent him on his way without stopping the game. And that's what Bob Melvin, the Oakland manager, talked about after the game, that he was a little bit surprised that it was so unobtrusive.
Yeah, you know, I think when you're Jacob deGrom and you're absolutely dealing every single game, I think you can have like the grin and have fun. And I had Dodgers Padres last night, and you could feel the intensity from Julio Urias because he had struggled so much in that first inning. He gave up 4 runs to the rival Padres in San Diego, could not find the strike zone. The ball was slipping out of his hand. He was all over the place, and he was visibly frustrated, grabbing dirt, rubbing his fingers together. And when the umpires came to check him after that first inning, he was literally looking up at the sky, like, just find a happy place. You could tell this is exactly what he didn't want to do. And what we impose in his mind going, really, you think if I'm using anything that I would miss the strike zone by that much? Like, so I think when you're Jacob deGrom, you can smile, kind of take off your belt. You want to check anything, but you got to think for some pitchers that are just frustrated in that moment, the last thing they want is a strip search right after they come off the mound.
Welcome to baseball in 2021, right? That's their new existence. That's what's going to happen every game with every pitcher for the rest of the year. So you can understand the frustration. I was watching that last night, and, you know, I don't know what he did or didn't do beforehand. You know, we had the conversation last week. I'm not comfortable with the word cheater for any pitcher. But it's got to be such an adjustment for some pitchers to suddenly be in this position where stuff that they may have relied on is not available to them.
Absolutely. And that's, we talked to Jace Tingler before the game, Dave Roberts, both of them very frustrated and more so the timing. And I'm like 100%. And I think most people are that this crackdown absolutely had to happen. But the fact that it happens now on June 21st, and one of the things that, you know, both managers brought up was just the fact that these guys have learned to pitch this way for a long time. The ones that have been using a foreign substance, it isn't like they've been using it the last few years. There's a lot of them that have been using it for a long time. So there's the mental aspect of telling someone, hey, you can't do something that you've been doing your entire career or even before that. But there's also just the aspect of like telling someone that they're going to have to change the way that they've been doing things.
And I think we got to remember, you know, last week we heard from Tyler Glasnow, you know, after he got hurt, where he feels like that this contributed to his injury. I think we need to remember, as we hear from pitchers and maybe, you know, folks on their behalf about how frustrating this is, there is a silent group of players who aren't going to be saying much, who are thrilled with this change. You know, they're not going to be a lot of position players out there now, I think, talking about how finally we have a chance. We've been completely dominated. So there is the other half of that perspective.
Absolutely. No, I think there's both sides. But, you know, I think for a lot of hitters, there's just the idea of, like, can the ball just not be ridiculous? Can we just not see the spins that we've seen? And Buster, it's two pitches that I point out mostly, too. That's the four-seam fastball and it's the curveball. Both of those pitchers are the ones that are affected the most by high spin rates. Those are the ones where you see a four-seam fastball look like a rise ball in softball. It's because of the amount of spin that makes it look like it's carrying. And with the curveball, you want to see that crazy depth that you see with some of the best curveballs in the game. It's because of that spin versus like the sinker and the changeup. I mean, those are two pitches. I was talking to a pitcher yesterday and said, you know, this is actually going to help the way I pitch, like a Kyle Hendricks, for example, because that's a pitch that you don't want any kind of spin, and you've never really needed grip specific to be able to make that ball. Actually, the lower the spin rate, the better the pitch.
Yep, no question. Last night, the Padres win the first game of that series. So much emotion, as you say, that, you know, they jumped on the Dodgers in the first inning. And what stood out to me was, boy, these are not your grandfather's Padres. These are not your dad's Padres. They beat the Dodgers with star power, the type of players that for years, you know, were not available to them because of a budgetary difference. But Peter Seidler's gone in there as the Padres owner. And so they signed Manny Machado for $300 million, and he has a big first inning. And they trade for Yu Darvish in the middle of the winter. The two teams seem pretty evenly matched to me.
Oh, absolutely. And it's interesting because obviously you look at their records, they're a little bit further apart, but when they play each other, so it's like you're looking really at the big games. And I know over the course of the season, you got to make it into the playoffs, but the Padres clearly play up when they're playing the Dodgers. And it was just so obvious and apparent. I mean, it helps when you have a sold out crowd in San Diego, the rivalry that has already been established from the first two series between these two teams. And to see Yu Darvish just in the stuff, Buster, we know how good Yu Darvish can be, but the 11 strikeouts, him coming out with a complete playoff mode mentality. It was just awesome watch. Manny Machado, you mentioned, I mean, he had the huge home run in that first inning to really set the tone for the Padres. And even Eric Hosmer, another huge signing, came in off the bench. He's been struggling. He came in off the bench and had a huge bat too. So, I mean, it's definitely clear that the Padres are definitely not your grandfather's or your father's, ironically, Padre.
So Wander Franco's being promoted today to play his first game in the big leagues. And the numbers that jump out to me, and I'm curious to see what you think about these. You know, we know about the strength. We know about the speed, the fact he's a switch hitter. But in the minor leagues, 214 games professionally, Jess, 95 walks and 75 strikeouts. 95 walks, 75 strikeouts, which in this era to me is like, wow, you don't see that combination very often.
Well, when do you ever see 80 as the tool, you know, the 80 tool for a hitter? I mean, it's been only one player since Wander Franco that's been in the big league, that's been a prospect, that's been, you never see that, right? So one other player in the last 10 years. And I think that hitting tool is not just the fact that he's a switch hitter, can hit to all the fields, the power, all the things that you love about hitting, but it's the takes. And it's an exciting time. It isn't just some guess. This guy could be good. He is good. He's already shown he is. And finally, we get to see him on the big stage.
Jacob DeGrom last night, crazy good, Jess. I can't remember a pitcher since Mariano Rivera who could command one side of the plate the way that DeGrom was last night. 60 of his 70 pitches to the glove side corner, and he just painted fastball slider, fastball slider.
Well, and the reason, I mean, when you talk about that glove side, whether you're a left-handed batter or a right-handed batter, it's the fact that you hear it about tunneling all the time, but that same slot that you see as a hitter and the way that he disguises both those pitches to mirror each other. So the slider coming out of that same slot, looking like the same pitch, and then the depth, and it's really the late depth that you get, and you just see stupid swings. And what I mean by that is that guys are missing by a lot. It's not just the swing and miss. It's the miss by a ton because of that deception that he does so well.
Yeah, Ronald Acuna Jr. does not look helpless very often the way he did last night. And last, I want to ask you about the piece that Cat O'Brien wrote, you know, former beat writer for the paper in Fort Worth and for New York Newsday. Look, it was wrenching to read. Tim and I talked about it yesterday, having known Cat. You and I talked about baseball's response to, you know, stories like these. in the wintertime after Jared Porter was let go. Where does baseball stand now, do you think, with this as they try to get better?
It's, I mean, it's frustrating. And I know it's going backwards, but it doesn't really matter because this is something that clearly is still happening today. First of all, I just want to say how brave it is for her to be even to tell that story and for her to come out and be able to be public. I know it was the Jared Porter stuff that is what triggered her to say, you know what, I've been holding on to this. I haven't told anyone in my family. The closest people to me don't even know this, but it's time that people do and understand the truth of what is around the game. It doesn't matter if it was 20 years ago, 10 years ago, or honestly yesterday. I don't feel like much has changed, although I do think since Jared Porter and everything that we've seen, Mickey Callaway earlier this year, I know that I've noticed a difference in the questions that have been asked, just the reach out from Major League Baseball across the board. And I'm hoping, especially when people are hired and we're talking about being proactive, so not just reactive, but actually getting these players and the staff, and I mean front office, everyone educated on how to handle this, because you're going to get certain people that maybe you can't change by one or two meetings and conversations, but it's really the people around. And that's what I notice is the culture that doesn't stop it. And that's what really ultimately needs to change. You might not be able to change the one that does the act. It's the ones around that look the other way, that maybe just give you the high five or the knuckles when you make a comment. That has to change.
It's clear that she did not feel support, and was certainly not confident she was going to get support. If you were running the baseball world today, what would be the first thing that you would do to help improve this situation?
Have more women be the ones that are doing the seminars and the education. Yes. Because, I mean, honestly, if you put Kat O'Brien or really, you know, Jean Asherman, who's, you know, an executive and assistant general manager with the New York Yankees, have women, Raquel Ferreira, like, I mean, everyone's got stories, Buster, and have them be the one in front of the room, personalizing, telling the story, talking about what it really feels like to be in the clubhouse and humanizing it, not have it be a video player that you roll into the middle of the room, or maybe it's something that, you know, HR comes in and checks the box and gives you a spiel or reading off a piece of paper. Buster, you and I have been on those meetings, right? It's like the most awkward moment when someone's reading all the things they're supposed to read, mumbling it and reading off a piece of paper versus getting in front of a room and really making it real.
All right, Jess. I know that I can see from the traffic, the plane is all loaded up and ready to go. Thanks for joining us.
You got it.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Peter Moylan pitched 12 years in the big leagues. He threw 499 games at a 3.10 ERA, and he's really passionate about the topic of foreign substances. Mr. Moylan, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, Buster. How are you this morning?
I'm great, because I get to talk with you. When you played, I'd come and find you, because you always had great insight, and you got that great sense of humor. Thanks for joining us.
Anytime, mate.
All right. So what'd you think about the first day of enforcement, the scenes that we saw yesterday? In some respects, I think it was worked out well for Major League Baseball that Jacob deGrom, the best pitcher on the planet, was the guy who got checked first.
he's already come out and admitted that, or most people have backed up his story that he doesn't use anything. So for him to come walking off and strip search, I thought it was quite hilarious. And his smile, you know, a lot of guys go into that mentality where you can't. I would have loved to see Max Scherzer get challenged first and see what kind of reaction he would have had, because he's a bit of a bulldog as opposed to DeGrom that likes to smile out there. But I think it's just yesterday was pretty normal. I thought it, you know, I was particularly excited to see what Yu Darvish did. And I felt like, you know, he went away from his curveball a bit yesterday, but his everything else, his cutter, his slider, and his fastball movement was absolutely there. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting today with a full slate of games and see the impact of this across 15 games and a lot more relievers coming in. And we had 2 7-inning games in New York yesterday, so we didn't see a lot of relievers come in. But I think a lot of the impact's going to be against the back-end relievers and you know, guys with big, big breaking balls. But it's still to be seen, mate. Honestly, it's just still to be seen.
I totally agree with you, and I'll get to that in a second. I think relatively the first day they met their goal of being unobtrusive in terms of pace of play. I loved, you know, that what they decided to do is to meet pitchers as they come off the mound, because they want this stuff to happen during the commercial breaks. They don't want to have it slow down the game. Sure. And other than, you know, checking closers as they come into the game, I think they're going to succeed in that. What do you think?
Yeah, I do too. I think they're going to look. We all know where guys go to get the stuff. So it's no secret. There's no new places to hide it out there. So I think that's the advantage for the umpires and MLB. I think if somebody's silly enough to still put a foreign substance on them when they're cracking down this hard, then, you know, they're going to get a 10-day vacation. But at the same time, put it this way, if you're a reliever that's been in the game for 6 or 7, 8 years, and this is the way you've always thrown, and you've had a contract based on this is the way you've always thrown, the concern's not going to be there. Right, he's not going to. Whether you can still sprint a breaking ball is not going to affect whether you get paid for the next 5 years. If you come up and you've used this stuff and you haven't been paid yet, you might be heading to arbitration. You might be a rookie. That's going to affect everything. The evaluation that's happening right now, and has been mentioned right across baseball, it's just the evaluation of new pitchers and what they're going to have as of today. It's going to be exciting. And look, when I talk about old guys, I'm not specifically talking about me. I know I am an old guy, but there's been a lot of guys that have been forced out of this game, especially guys that had my role, that have been forced out of this game, that grew up just using, whether it was nothing, whether it was a little bit of pine tar, or whether it was sunscreen and rosin. And we've been forced out of the game now from these guys that have come up and are using other stuff. So it's too long. It's too far away for those guys. It's been too long now. There's no coming back for those guys, except for Joe Bimel, who's somehow Superman. But, you know, that's the other thing. You know, there's been so many injuries and so much turnaround in the back ends of bullpens that they're running out of guys to throw out there too.
Yeah, and I agree with you about the relievers and them being affected. And maybe as we look forward, that being the group to watch for guys who are going to say, you know what, I'm going to try to get away with it. Because when you look at the economics of it, it would make sense that if one of them says, oh, my God, I can't be successful without spider tack, that they might try to find some way to, you know, hide it on their bodies or some form or fashion. You know, I think about how many relievers we've seen in the last 5 years who, you know, bounce around the minor leagues for a lot of years and they are emerging throwing harder than ever. Yeah. Right. With four-seam fastballs at the top of the zone or these crazy curveballs with crazy spin rates. And if in fact, you know, this is a game changer for them and they're making, you know, 1.1 million or 900,000, which within the baseball world is not a lot of money.
Right.
I almost feel like, why wouldn't you try it? Reminds me so much of the steroid guys where, you know, those fringy 4A players who are like, well, you know what? If I go out there, I have a big year and then I get busted, I still get, you know, the majority of my contract. I think that's going to be the case for some of these relievers, especially because the punishment is 10 days paid.
Yeah. The other difference is they're not getting checked. They're not getting a P test as they walk off the field every day. You know, it was very hit and miss back with the steroid stuff. Whereas this is, if you're going to risk it, you're probably going to get caught. And this is the first time I felt comfortable saying that about anything that MLB has implemented. If they text you, you're probably going to get caught with something because there's, as I said to you before, there's only limited places you can put this stuff, Buster. And it's so tacky and so sticky that you can't just sort of reach back behind and you just kind of be like peeling it off your hands. And I just think that it's going to have an impact on, and I don't want to name any names, but it's just, you're going to see it today and you're going to see it at the back end. And it's just, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I really am. And the timing of it all is a little bit frustrating for me as a former player as well.
I've heard you talk about this before. You feel like that pitchers did go too far with this.
100%, without question. It turned a lot of guys into pitchers that they would never have been without a foreign, sticky, sticky substance. And, you know, a lot of people tarnish everyone with the same brush, whether you've used one little bit of pine tar or sunscreen and rosin, or whether you've gone the full spider tack or pelican stick or whatever the thing is called. But people have to understand that it's two different things. It's just not even in the same ballpark what these guys have done. And velocity is not going to be impacted at all. It's the movement on fastballs and it's the movement on breaking pitches that's going to be affected.
Yeah.
You still going to see the same velo.
I was going to say, my sense is from talking with folks around the two pitches, four-seam fastballs at the top of the zone, curveballs.
Correct. Which is what has been the main pitch for the last 3 years?
Four-seam fastballs, top of the zone, against these launch angle swings and curveballs at the bottom of the zone.
Exactly. It's fascinating to me that it's, we've come to this. It really, it's just, I really hope that it doesn't, the impact isn't felt. That we, 2 weeks from now, we look back and we go, you know what? The stuff's gone and guys are still throwing the ball exactly the same way as they were and we see no difference. I really hope that happens because I still love this game and I still love watching it and I feel like there's still so much that people would enjoy about it. And there's just the focus has been on stuff that doesn't need to be focused on. We've got so much young talent in this game and the conversation this week is about relief pitchers using sticky stuff, which is a massive issue. I understand that. But so it... Like the All-Star Games coming up in Colorado. Like, let's talk about the home run derby that should be epic. Let's talk about these sorts of things. But unfortunately, midway through the season of the first season back from 60-game season, we're talking about something that doesn't really, like, it's another side issue as opposed to what's happening in between the lines.
So last week, Rich Hill, who's the oldest pitcher in baseball, came out and said that he really feels like the Players Association had a missed opportunity in dealing with this. And look, I you know, agree with him to a high degree that there's an absolute epic failure that the two sides, Major League Baseball and the Player Association, couldn't have a conversation to find a middle ground substance that everyone could live with. We know that Major League Baseball has been trying to develop a baseball with a tacky surface, something that would be more comfortable for pitchers. And, you know, that didn't go anywhere. I cannot believe that these two sides, that the relationship is so bad that they couldn't agree on something together. It kind of drives me crazy as someone covers the sport. And for years, you know, would hear about substantive conversations between the two sides about, you know, seeing a high ground that they both wanted to get to, seeing a target they both wanted to get to and work it out. The fact that they couldn't do that in this case for something that's been a problem for years drives me crazy.
Are you really surprised, though? Because we are dealing with a couple of multi-billion-dollar seven-year-olds is what we're dealing with. They get their panties in a bunch and they just want to prove the other one wrong. It's basically society in a microcosm. But I hear what you're saying. And the frustrating part for me is exactly that. They've had time to work on this. This has not been an issue that has just snuck up on them. This has been around for a couple of years. Both sides sort of agree. You know, majority of the senior representation from the pitching side and the senior representation from the hitting side are in agreement that pine tar and rosin does not affect spin rate enough to where you want to outlaw it from the game. And it gives you enough grip that batters feel safe to step in without effectively expecting a fastball at their nose.
Yep. And, you know, the idea that Major League Baseball would implement this midseason, it's far from ideal. And I also, when I heard Garrett Cole, you know, speak passionately last week about, hey, Major League Baseball, don't shut us out. I was like thinking to myself, Garrett, get right. Clayton Kershaw, get Josh Donaldson, get Giancarlo Stanton and ask Manfred for a Zoom call. Right. Because you can do that. You have the power to do that. Not as if the two sides can't talk. It's just they haven't talked.
All right, exactly. And I think they're saving it all up for the offseason, which should be interesting for in your position. How do you see that going? Just out of interest, how do you see this offseason going? Do you think it's going to be just too?
From what I understand, when the owners had a meeting 2 weeks ago, the conversation was not about if there's going to be a lockout, but when there's going to be a lockout and what's the strategy after that. You know, the current CBA is set to expire December 1st. And then the question is, will the two sides dig in or will there be more conversation ahead of time? There has been so little conversation relative to, you know, the rest of my time covering the sport the last 30 years. it's shocking to me. It's shocking that there's not talking, and it kind of drives me crazy. Before you go, I want to ask you about this because you can appreciate this far better than I could. The level of dominance of Jacob deGrom. You know, for me, the thing that jumps out is the precision that he's able to command the outside corner against right-handed hitters, the inside corner to left-handed hitters is stunning.
Yeah.
As a pitcher, when you see deGrom right now, what do you see?
I see someone something I've never seen in 15 years that I've been watching this game on a daily basis and in my whole entire life. I wasn't privy to – I saw Pedro a little bit, but I don't think he had the precision. He had the stuff, absolutely, but I don't know if he had the precision that deGrom's had. He kind of reminds me of Tom Glavine, where he just nibbles at the edges, but he nibbles at the edges at 100 instead of 86 or 84, whatever Glav used to do. It is just – as a guy that's struggled I have a sinker and a slider. So I've got two choices and I literally threw it right in the middle. One went that way and one went that way. Whereas he is able to do that on both sides of the plate on all quadrants with three pitches at any time. And he doesn't even throw his curveball, which guys say arguably is one of his better pitches. So I just hope that he can get through this period of whatever's happening with his shoulder. And the fact that I said this the other day, that is it just what you do when you have the best pitcher in the world? You just get an MRI between starts just to make sure everything's okay. And then he goes back out there and gets you five innings in, and then he just makes sure everything's okay again. I don't know. Wrap him in bubble wrap. Do whatever you got to do. But he's so fun to watch. He's much watched television.
Oh, absolutely. I asked Dom Smith, his teammate, a couple of weeks ago, how other players look at him. He said, like a god.
Yeah. He's so humble.
He's like a mythic figure on those games he starts. And the fans' reaction to him in Citi Field is so much fun.
I was kind of hoping that it was all an act. I was kind of hoping he had a flaw and he was just like someone that I asked, like, man, what's deGrom like? Oh, he's just a complete dick, man. He just would not want to be around him at all. But you never get that either. It's just, he's a great guy. Great. Of course he is.
Exactly. All right, sir. I'm sure I'll have you back. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, right, Buzz. See you, mate.
0-0-9-6. This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. Sarah, good to see you again this week.
Yeah, great to see you, Buster. Always fun to be chatting baseball.
But I was bummed yesterday when Hazel May reported that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has decided to not participate in the Home Run Derby. I was like, man, we got Ohtani. I think we're going to get Pete Alonso. And then you're hoping for as many of the juniors as you possibly could. The three of them, Fernando Tatis Jr., Ronald Acuna Jr., Vlad Jr., but Vlad Jr. Backing out. That was a bummer.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of bummed to see that. I really wanted to see him defend. You know, he hit the most home runs in any derby last time in 2019, but didn't actually win based on like the rounds and everything else. So really wanted that rematch with Alonso if that were to happen, or just to see him against Ohtani, since we're talking about the two of them in the same sentence all the time. But, you know, you understand it. But I mean, he's got such a long career ahead of him. I hope that we'll see him back in the Home Run Derby, and I'm sure we will at some point.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 22. So speaking of Vlad, he, as he said, will not be in the Home Run Derby, but it does appear that he's probably going to be in the All-Star game. I don't think that's a stretch whatsoever to say. So he's 22 years old. And in both of the ballot updates that we've had last Monday and then this Monday, he was the leading vote getter across all of baseball. And I was really curious if that was notable for a player that young. I mean, we would all agree watching him that it's certainly a great choice for a guy to be getting all of the votes. But it turns out that either Guerrero, Acuna, or Tatis, all of whom are amongst the top leading vote getters, would be the youngest leading vote getter that we've seen since voting was returned to the fans in 1970. So four players have been the top overall vote getter and been 24 years old for that All-Star game. That's the current mark. So 2017, Bryce Harper, 1994, Ken Griffey Jr., 86, Daryl Strawberry, 1972, Johnny Bench, and of course, the guys I mentioned. The juniors, they are all 23 or younger. And I just think it's incredible for the sport that there are these guys who are so young and already have that national appeal that they're getting the top amounts of votes across the country. I mean, that's not just the Blue Jays fans or the Braves fans or the Padres fans who are doing that.
Number two.
Number two is 70. So as I kind of said before, it feels like these days when we talk about Vlad, we have to talk about Shohei Ohtani. So Shohei Ohtani's most recent home run was his 70th career home run. And he's now on a list of just four guys with at least 70 career homers at the plate and 100 career strikeouts as a pitcher. So Babe Ruth, 714 and 501. So Ohtani has a ways to go to get to them. But the others, Rick Ankiel, 76 homers, 269 strikeouts, and Johnny Lindell with 72 homers and 146 strikeouts. So Ohtani is a couple of homers away from being second on this list if you're looking by home runs. It's pretty soon going to be just him and Babe Ruth, which is how most of these notes have ended up anyway, but pretty cool that he's going to pass those next two soon.
Number one.
Number one is 050. It's got to be Jacob DeGrom. We have to talk about what he's doing this year. 050 ERA in his first 12 starts. It's the lowest by any pitcher in his first 12 starts of the season since earned runs became official. He has an 051 whip, which is the lowest by any pitcher in any 12 start span since at least 1901. He's allowed one or zero earned runs in 12 straight starts, longest stretch by a traditional starting pitcher. 113 opponent batting average, which is the lowest by a pitcher in any 12 game span since at least 1901. I mean, every single thing, it's lowest span, not even just start a season, lowest overall. And I know he's not throwing the innings that Bob Gibson threw, and of course we should acknowledge that, but he's pitching in today's game. He's pitching in the game that he's been faced with, much as Bob Gibson did. And it's just incredible what he's been doing.
Yeah, we have an incredible statistic in the Bleacher tweets about DeGrom from this year. I've been asked, and I'm sure you are too, different shows to try to put this in perspective, what we're doing with DeGrom. For me, it's easy. You just say he's the best ever. But the comparison that I'm sort of beginning to settle on is in terms of his precision and his ability to command, you know, the same spot over and over and over and over again, which speaks so much to his athleticism, is Mariano Rivera, who, as you know, for years dominated hitters when the hitters knew exactly what he was going to throw. And generally speaking, the area in which he was going to throw it, which was a cut fastball away to right-handed hitters, inside to left-handed hitters. Except the difference between Rivera and DeGrom is that rather than do it for one inning at a time or two innings at a time, he's doing it 5 to 7 innings and he's throwing the ball 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is I totally agree with that comparison, but it's incredible for a guy to be able to do that and not be overexposed going as deep into games as DeGrom does. And it's funny because I just mentioned Gibson, and of course Gibson threw pretty much 9 innings every start. But if you're comparing to someone like Mariano Rivera, Jacob DeGrom is shouldering quite the load, you know, in comparison to that, even going 6 innings per start, 7 innings per start. So it's just incredible. I mean, I always think that these decade, cross era comparisons just run people into getting frustrated, I think unnecessarily. And I completely, you know, if he does this, if he finishes with an 050 or an 075 ERA, I mean, that's going to be the best. That's going to be the best by a qualified pitcher. And of course, every era is different. Guys are throwing different amounts of innings, but this is incredible. And I would argue that it's harder to keep a lower ERA with a lower innings total. So in a certain way, what he's doing is even more impressive because he doesn't have the fact that he's out there through the ninth to kind of help lower that number overall. So it's just amazing to watch.
All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me.
Bleacher Tweets. Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. First up, we have a pair of Bob Gibson, Jacob DeGrom questions. The first one from PK Steinberg. He writes, are comparisons of 2021 Jacob DeGrom to 1968 Bob Gibson appropriate? He's likely neither going to pitch half as many innings nor face half as many batters. DeGrom's clearly a stud pitcher doing a once-in-generation thing, but Gibson cleared 300 innings pitched. And then Perry White at Mr. Perry White writes in with the Gibson versus DeGrom comparisons. The biggest difference, why number 45 will never be eclipsed, in my opinion, is average innings pitched per game. My math put Gibson at 8.9 innings and DeGrom at 6. 28 complete games for Gibson. Different era, still incredible. Hashtag best ability is availability. What do you think about these comparisons?
First off, you start with this, that there is an apples to oranges element to this, no question about it, because of how pitchers are handled. And also how athletes are. Look, I've always been of the belief that athletes, generally speaking, get better over time. When you look at, to see some of the numbers, for example, that Wilt Chamberlain put up, you know, averaging 50 points a game in the NBA, averaging 30 rebounds a game in the NBA. That's crazy. But it was a different time in this sport, and the game was, and how it's played is different. And I'd also say this, in terms of pure dominance, it's inappropriate to compare DeGrom to Gibson, because you know what? Gibson wasn't as good as DeGrom is right now. That's just a fact. In terms of him, DeGrom's ability to dominate hitters right now, they ran a great stat on SNY last night. Gary Cohn presented this. It was adjusted ERA plus, which basically measures a pitcher against other pitchers in his time, okay? 100 is the baseline. In Bob Gibson's 1968, incredible 1968 season, he was plus 258. Pedro Martinez in the steroid era, which to me was the greatest pitcher I had ever seen before what we're seeing in DeGrom this year. He was like plus 290, 295, that sort of thing. Taylor, you know what Jacob DeGrom is this year? Again, 100 is the baseline. Gibson 68, 258. Pedro, 1999, 2000, around 290. What do you think that DeGrom is this year?
Oh, wow. I'm buckled up for this, but let's go 350.
How about plus 777? He skipped 300. He skipped 400. He skipped 500. He skipped 600. He's at plus 77 compared to his peers. It's not close.
All right. Shut the book on that one. That's a great stat there.
Yep.
Let's go.
Again, courtesy of SNY. I did not notice that, and Gary presented it on their show last night.
Shout out, Gary. Great guy. Let's go to Tom Striegel at TJ Striegel. He writes in, what do you think about Kyle Schwarber as an all-star? His numbers are among league leaders after his big weekend.
Yep, agree. I think he'll be put on the team one way or another. And who knows? He did such a nice job at the Home Run Derby in Washington. Maybe his other guys are stepping aside and deciding not to do it. Maybe Kyle Schwarber would be a great addition.
Last one for the day, Corey Childs at M. Corey Childs writes in, do you think some baseball analysts are suffering from 2020 short seasonism when it comes to struggling teams, specifically the Braves? 5 games back this early means almost nothing to me. I don't know about analyst, Buster, because you keep putting in perspective for me, but I think I am.
Yeah, Corey, I got to tell you, it's almost like you are you embody the voice of Brian Snitker, the Braves manager, who before our Sunday night game the other day was very passionate, saying, you know what? It's a long dang season. The idea that we're out of this, what a joke. And he also feels like when he looks at his group of relievers, yeah, they miss Mark Melanson. I don't think there's any question about it. But he also feels like he's got a bunch of guys who potentially could turn their performance around. I agree with that. I think we got a long way to go.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Thanks for writing in, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jess, Sarah, Peter Moylan, Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.